The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? '2582, 16 years ago, 8 kilometers south of the Stukov desert border. A stiff breeze ruffled the heavy curtain drapes lashed to the windowsill planks. The air inside the small hut was stifling. Kiefer Stukov peeled open his eyes. He laid on the thin, ratty cot and stared up at the ceiling, slate and wooden roof slats cracking under the stress of the heat beating down outside. A large rag draped over his drenched forehead helped trap and recycle some of his sweat to keep him cool. The rest of his body was mostly bare, tanned skin, except for the dark, ruby-colored leg wrappings, cloth girdle, and rope sandals. His chest and shoulders were broad and defined from a life spent migrating through the perilous and unyielding Stukov Desert.
Soon rise. Ground run. Scorpo prize,
he said in a broken desert clanner cant. He closed his eyes again and breathed in the sultry air, tingling his nostrils. He rustled his brown hair as he reclined on the cot, and fine, red dust shook loose and drifted through the air, creating crimson vortices at each movement of his hand through the russet waves on his head. Red dust settled onto his colored clothing and blended in seamlessly. The drapes were pulled back from the outside, flooding the hut with sunlight and cascading more scarlet sediment into the air. Kiefer propped himself up on his elbows and saw the sunlit faces of his great-grandmother, Phoenix Stukov, and the shaved head and thin lips of Registrar Moran outside the window. Phoenix motioned for Kiefer.
Come, hunt Scorpo prize.
Kiefer smiled and sprung from the fraying cot. He grabbed his spring metal bow and small belted quiver and ran outside to meet them. The group left the ramshackle hut behind them and traveled through the center of the settlement. Swaying wooden signs on other shanties and a guidepost at the center of the small community was caked in the same red dust as Kiefer's hair and clothes. Through the sandy lettering, one could make out Cinder, the name of the hamlet on the northernmost fringe of the Protectorate. Cinder was barely a colony as the judiciary saw it, but 4 years into Supreme Judge Arcot's tenure, and it had remained unmolested. The victory at siege at the hands of the judges had sent a shiver through the spine of Borka, and all the scattered clanners were reluctant to incur the new leader's wrath for such a petty and insignificant scrap of land. Phoenix, Kiefer, and Moran passed simple fruit stands in the market and waved off pushy vendors peddling their granite statuettes of the first one and bronze coins with Latin phrases etched on the backs.
Walk in the footsteps of the first lawbringer. Flip this coin on the executioner's block in the square and receive good fortune.
Phoenix and Kiefer completely ignored the vendors as Registrar Moran was mobbed.
Piss off,
he spat and shouldered through the merchants. The trio made their way to the edge of town, treading on souvenirs and paraphernalia, left to crumble in the soil as a dusty haze covered the town and their tracks behind them. A small encampment was already set up in a rock dirt patch opposite an ossified tree in anticipation of the Stukovs' and Moran's arrival. stepping into the shade dropped the temperature by a few degrees and kept the hot breezes at bay. Kiefer looked about in wonder and amazement at the medical and telemetry tools set up inside tents and under lean-tos. Hooded Spitalians and the odd chronicler among the crowd took readings and notated their findings on clipboards and digital pads. Moran caught Kiefer's bewildered gaze and spoke over his shoulder to Phoenix, interacting with a pharmacist behind him. The registrar's narrow eyes focused intently on the physique of Kiefer, his potential revealed in every striation of muscle across his arms and legs.
"He seems interested in our equipment. Tell him his skills will make up for any inadequacies or failings of our machines."
Phoenix walked across the sands and patted Kiefer on the shoulder. He smiled back at her broadly.
"Newfound and chrome, humming, sparking. Ground and gain know-how?"
he asked, curious. Phoenix returned her great-grandson's smile, the lines on her dark, leathery face stretching in the corners of her mouth as she spoke.
"Ground run and hunt more than humming and sparking. Ground and show know-how to new ally."
Kiefer smirked, with a gleam in his eyes.
"Yes. Scorpo prize on vow,"
he replied, chest swelling in confidence. He pulled down his cooling rag he had used earlier over his face, turning it into a blood-red balaclava with slits in the side and face mask to allow venting from the heat. The excess material was unraveled and flowed freely as a small side cape to prevent chafing and slipping of the quiver slung over his shoulder. Phoenix tossed him a small canteen and he caught it in stride as he trotted off further north away from the camp. His cape whirled and lashed around him as the winds assaulted him, and the red sands took him. Several hours later, the camp activity had died down in the scorching heat of the late afternoon. Increased sandstorm activity was causing chronicler and spitalian equipment to go haywire inside the tent. Registrar Moran fanned himself with a sheet of paper in the shade as Phoenix looked out of the tent flap for any signs of her great-grandson.
"Are you sure you sent him with enough water, Phoenix?"
Moran said, propping his feet up on the radio desk. Phoenix paused before answering, spotting a red outline amidst the whipping grains of sand.
"Yes, I am sure. Here he comes," she responded.
Moran snapped his fingers for the pharmacists and epigeneticists on site to ready their containers and test tubes.
"Incoming samples. Double-check PPE and ready 20 cc's of heparin. Have the streamer check the freon levels in the mobile insulator."
The commotion of folks rushing to and fro disguised the sound of the young nomad entering the tent space. Kiefer stamped inside, sweat and dirt staining his bare skin a reddish hue. Every bustling person in the tent stopped dead in their tracks to look at the strapping nomad, who held up three menacing-looking arthropods by their barbed tails. Webbed pincers and chomping mandibles chattered eerily in the air as tiny legs wriggled along the inner thorax of the beast. The meter-long barbed tails were lashed together with braided twine, and he held them aloft in front of Registrar Moran as the desert scorpions writhed under his control. The Spitalian's almond-shaped eyes narrowed even further from his cheeks, pushing up into a grin.
"I speak truth. Stukovs know how to best hunt. Ally will honor and supply Stukovs for many mounds and moons?"
Phoenix asked. Moran leaned in closer to look at the scorpion squirming in Kiefer's grasp.
"Yes, you speak truth. The Spitalians, no, I, will take care of your clan. They will find shelter in new mounds in Justitian,"
he concluded, enunciating each syllable of the city.
"If your clan can provide steady Stukov scorpion delivery, you will have protection, water, and shelter for the rest of your moons."
He gently prodded one of the legs of the scorpion, and it lashed out, nearly striking the Spitalian in the cheek with its stinger.
"Beautiful,"
he said, mesmerized. He glanced up at Kiefer, panting and sun-worn from his time out in the open.
You will make a Fine's battalion one day, destined to annihilate these fucking pests and rid humans of this plague once and for all.
Kiefer simply looked at him, a bit bemused at his strange speech.
Ahem. Kiefer, best ground run. Best ground run,
Moran emphasized, making sweeping gestures with his hands and arms. The other battalion attendants grabbed the scorpions from Kiefer's hands with tongs and shoved them into refrigerated boxes, hissing and squealing, before the boxes were sealed shut. Phoenix threw an arm around Kiefer's shoulders. She whispered in his ear as Moran directed the other staff to move the loads onto carts for transport.
No more Rome. No more drought. Safe mounds. Water for all moons.
Kiefer embraced his great-grandmother, matriarch of the Stukov clan. Could it be that the struggle was finally over? Would his baby brothers and sisters not have to know famine and thirst for the rest of their winters? Were they nomads no more? Branching nomad clans in the Stukov Desert would soon wander into the Protectorate, seeking shelter for their kin after an extended drought killed off hundreds. The lakes that were fed by the ice barrier to the far north had dried up, and the strength of the wanderers was waning. Using their skills to support the battalions and the judges would prove fruitful for the Stukov nomads, at least at first. After all, the best-laid plans of mice and men often go astray.
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
.2598, afternoon on the fortified roads, 5 kilometers outside Cathedral City. The overcast skies cast a gray pallor on the land, but visibility remained high for a kilometer or two ahead of the travelers. Black birds circled overhead, slowly drifting on the remaining warmth currents spiraling up from the ground. Kiefer walked several paces ahead of Etta, the soft thud of his boots filling in the silence. He held up his hand to signal a halt to Etta and Sudo trailing behind. Etta walked up beside Kiefer and surveyed the landscape with him as Sudo remained quiet. The pathway was littered with weeds and shrubs, and the sides were heavily eroded. Busted granite and worn brick that fortified portions of the road were caked in flaking mud crack. The veins of drying earth and silty clay spread out like a network across the earth. Kiefer squatted down and picked up a piece of the mud crack, while Etta cut a root free from a nearby shrub with her penknife and sniffed it.
Clay that collects like this washes in and washes out in a hurry. Perhaps this was a larger water crossing years ago. This erosion probably came from a flash flood. It's good we haven't encountered much rain,
he reasoned. Etta let the shrub frond drop in the wind and watched it get carried away over Sudo's head.
True. We'll have to pace ourselves around large stretches like this in future so we don't get swept away. These roots are still mighty thirsty even after that dousing Sudo and I got 2 days prior,
she responded. They marched on, carefully stepping over each broken stone. Any wayward edges that jutted up could puncture a boot or tear a seam in a pant leg. The spires of Cathedral City loomed in the distance and gained more definition with each passing kilometer. A stone wall ringed around the base of the spires and tapered further down on a hill dotted with patchwork shanties white smoke puffing out of their chimney tops. The white smoke drifted down the hill and mingled with other dust thrown up from a tight platoon marching around the perimeter of the Anabaptist city. Kiefer adjusted his course and pace to put the group on an intercept course with the soldiers, as Etta spurred on Petra to close the last bit of distance. 24 orgiastics marching in formation shook the ground with their striped trousers and cotton shirts hanging loosely around their meaty, muscular frames. The platoon leader was a black-haired woman adorned in a heavy red jacket. Cords of twisted leather bearing a broken cross pendant dangled from her neck, and a flanged mace strapped across her wrist bounced up and down in time with her marching. She spotted the trio and swung the mace expertly in her hand, signaling a full company halt. Dozens of eyes, primed for action, stared down at the new arrivals. The platoon leader kept her distance as she shouted,
"God be with you! What brings a judge, battalion, and chronicler to Cathedral City? Speak quickly, lest ye be found wanting and turned away from humility and fellowship."
Etta removed her hat and stepped forward.
"Time to work on that diplomacy,"
she thought nervously.
"They who dwell in the shelter of Rebus and the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty."
A teasing smirk widened across the raven-haired orgiastic's face, followed by a hearty laugh.
"Scripture, from a justice of the city? Next you'll be telling me that chronicler fills its talk box with incense on holy days."
General murmurs and chuckles came from the stalwart pack at her back. She shoved her mace into a tight scabbard on her thigh and folded her arms, rubbing her nose casually as she talked.
"That's all well and good, Judge, and I'd never turn down a battalion that lives to shrivel up the sepsis, but that,"
she poked a finger at Sudo,
"is gonna have to sleep outside."
Etta feels a bit conflicted. She doesn't want to vouch for Sudo, but it is part of her detachment brief to make sure the chronicler is kept safe. Sleeping separately from her charge doesn't exactly mean insubordination, but word always gets around from the chroniclers. I'll roll a d6. 4 or more, and she'll go to bat for the pain in her ass. It might even pay off and build some team synergy in the future.
"With respect, I must insist. This chronicler is under my care and jurisdiction, and subject to the extended hospitality of the Protectorate's allies."
Etta could hardly believe the words coming out of her mouth. She felt as though she was definitely earning her bonus in flintlock pistols today.
"I will be responsible for Pseudo-19's actions in the domain and cloisters of..."
The orgiastic boss cut her short.
"Well, that solves that problem. Since it is your pet, you can sleep outside with it."
Pseudo bristled at the comment and gnashed her silver teeth inside the mask.
"Petty ideologies, dirty hands, weak minds,"
she murmured. Kiefer scratched his head and sighed heavily.
"Please, Etta, Pseudo, you can make use of the tent, and I will bring you water and provisions before the night patrol. Is this satisfactory?"
Etta opened her mouth to speak, but nodded instead in agreement and looked at Pseudo for approval. Her countenance, as always, was unreadable, so Etta took the small victory where she could. At least they would be together.
"Well, praise be. Orgiastics, turn in!"
she barked out her commandments.
"Praise be to Rebus!"
The pack rounded the corner to the front entry gate, and Kiefer began unhooking the trunk from Petra. He cast a glance at the ladies.
"No rain tonight. Safe for a moon, at least."
He thought he'd found the positive, but all he got in return was an annoyed shrug. Thanks for listening to this episode of Echoes of Eschaton. I love engaging with my listeners on Twitter at Echoes of Eschaton and via email at echoesofeschaton@gmail.com. So reach out and say hello. I'm also on the new Spotify for Podcasters app. Spotify for Podcasters offers new ways to interact on each episode I release, with Q&As and polls that might influence the course of the show. It doesn't matter if you're a podcast creator or a listener, you have a voice in Echoes of Eschaton. So download the Spotify for Podcasters app for iOS and Android today and try it out. If you're interested in helping the show grow, you can leave a rating on your Podfetcher of choice to help others find the show and help me improve it. Or you can share it on your social media platform of choice. Until next time.